Hi, I'm Paul Havershood, host of The Cost of Living. It's a show about money and how it shapes our lives. In big ways, like why inflation could get worse if we all make more money.
Here's the hard truth in all of this. Workers are going to have to eat that real wage loss.
And small ways, like what's the fastest way to order fast food?
That first Big Mac that comes out of the kitchen is going to the drive-thru.
Check out The Cost of Living. We're on CBC Listen or wherever you get podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Five years in the making, and now it's out, and it is good. It's fun. Today, we're talking about the new album from innovator and trailblazer Janelle Monáe. Plus, what do the big layoffs at Spotify say about the future of podcasts? And Law & Order coming to the streets of Toronto. I'm Talia Schlanger, sitting in for Elamine Abdul-Mahmoud. This is Commotion. All right, it's Friday, the weekend is here, and so is Janelle Monáe's brand new album.
Dancing in the dark.
How you feel?
Phenomenal. A true work of art.
She's ready.
Phenomenal. And they all bow to you.
How you feel?
Phenomenal. Ready for round two.
I feel so phenomenal. Say it to my face.
That's a bit of a new Janelle Monáe song called Phenomenal, and that is also the sound of everyone listening just swaying along to it right now. That song is off The Age of Pleasure, Janelle Monáe's first full-length release in 5 years. And while they took a break from music to star in some high-profile films like Glass Onion, A Knives Out Story, she's back. A-Harmony, Jackson Weaver, and Stacey Lee Kong were all up early listening to Janelle's latest album, I Was Too. They've got some thoughts, and we'll talk about that and a couple of other big stories this week. Welcome, you three.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Oh, I'm excited about this. Okay, so before we get to talking about the new album and really digging in here, we've all got smiles on our faces. Janelle Monáe really got a lot of people talking with the first bit of a video she released for this record, the music video for this song.
I really got a thing for my lipstick lover, 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 lover. I'll do anything for my lipstick lover, 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 lover. On my neck, leave a sticky icky in a place I won't forget. I like lipstick on my neck.
Okay, that's a bit of lipstick lover. Janelle Monáe dropped the music video for that song last month. Got a lot of positive feedback. There were some criticisms too. Jackson, can you briefly fill us in on what those criticisms were?
Yeah, I mean, like going back to the beginning of Janelle Monáe, if you're not familiar with her, she has a very specific sort of style. She played this character called Cindy Mayweather, futuristic android. So she wore a lot of suits, a lot of, you know, outfits, and like that bled into the music as well. Lipstick Lover off the new album is kind of a right turn or left turn for a lot of people. A lot of her fans, because it's very, very overtly sexual, both in the lyrics and in the music video. There's a lot of nudity, and she said she was actually forced to pixelate it, censor it against her will. And she performed a live version of the song a little bit ago, and she flashed her chest. That went online, social media, and a lot of her fans, not all of her fans, a lot of people sticking up for her, but a lot of her fans were saying that this is a step backward for Janelle Monáe. She's relying on sexuality in a way that is negative. I'm not saying this. I'm going to clarify, but that's a lot of the criticism that's been going around her since that song came out.
Yeah, she seemed to respond to all this in an interview she did. So with radio host Angie Martinez, have a listen to this.
I can show titties. I can show ass. I can be in a suit. I can be in a swimsuit. I can drink. I can smoke weed. I can do all of that. I'm not in a respectability politics. I never was. Respectability politics is killing us. And I think what you see, and I've been doing it for years, is like trying my best to dissolve that and unlearn all of that.
Harmony, what do you make of that?
I think Janelle is absolutely right. Not only is Janelle grown, she's 37 years old. She's grown. She has autonomy over her body and can express herself any way that she wants to. But she's absolutely right in that the idea that anyone has to dress a certain way, talk a certain way, act a certain way to deserve respect. That is an absurd notion. I think that's something, especially within the Black community, that people used to play into. Oh, well, maybe if I'm a little docile or I turn parts of my personality off, I'll be accepted. I'll be respected. I might be able to shield myself against racism. It's an idea that doesn't work. She's absolutely right in that it's killing us. Everyone deserves respect just by virtue of being a human. And humans are a lot of things. They're not just one thing. I think she's just expressing another side of herself here, and we should allow her and anyone else to do that.
It almost seems like an act of protest, you know, right? Like the personal and how we use our bodies is always political, but especially with her devotion, like seeming devotion to being naked and doing whatever she wants, it feels political.
It does in certain ways. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's not actually that hard a turn. I don't know if you guys remember, but the music video for Pink was like,
oh,
literally.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
yeah.
There was like a vagina pair of pants with her poking her head through. Like, this is not actually unusual.
Exactly.
We're different. It's fine.
And I think it's absurd that just having your body in its natural state and being proud of that and planting your feet in that is seen as political or seen as something that's so rash to begin with.
Yeah, my favorite tweet about this said something like, may she always be blessed with good lighting and good moisturizer, and that's it. Okay, so we've talked about the video. Let's talk about the album. I'm so excited about this. Stacey, let's start with you. What was your initial reaction to what you heard?
I loved it. I listened to it last night at midnight and then listened to it again this morning and was like, yes. Okay, so you know what it feels like to me? It feels like a getting ready album. So like you know what I mean? Like, so you're getting ready to go out. It's summer. You want something that's like a vibe, but like you also have to put on your eyeliner so it can't be too hype. So it feels like that. Maybe this is very specific to me. I'm not very good at eyeliner, but like, it feels summery. I feel like there's some like dance hall, reggae, Afro beats happening. And I feel like her previous albums, I liked them, but they were so high concept. And so this feels like listenable and approachable to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a Beyonce comparison, but not in the way that you think. So if you've seen any footage from the Renaissance tour, or if you've been to the Renaissance tour, I think one thing that stands out is Beyonce looks like she's having so much fun. So like, everything is still very technically excellent. It's a spectacle, all of those things. But like, there's something relaxed about how Beyonce is performing. I feel like that is the same vibe in this album.
Yeah.
Which maybe is like what we need in 2023, honestly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jackson, what about you?
I mean, I don't want to be a stick in the mud. I will say that I'm kind of the opposite, where I love the high concept stuff. And like, as... she strikes me as kind of like a non-binary Jacob Collier, like in the sense that there's so much going on in her music. It's so odd and strange and weird. Like, she has like microtonal things and Make Me Feel. There's like a LSD black moth super rainbow vibe for Mushrooms and Roses. And there's just like so many time changes, signature changes. Everything is weird. This one, it's kind of like Lorde's Solar Power, where she does kind of make it more accessible, make it more listenable. I like being weirded out. But that said, this is like a great album. I have my own personal biases, but objectively, this is a really good summer listen.
That's a good take. Harmony, I want to know where you feel like this sits against, you know, what Jackson was just saying, against Janelle Monáe's other releases.
Yeah, so it's too early to say where in the catalog this one sits. I like to kind of sit with an album before I make that assessment. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely agree with Stacey in that this is the most fun that I've heard Janelle having. It's the most fun I've had listening to her. It's a great hot weather summer vibe mm-hmm. album. And I am just happy to see Janelle so comfortable and so confident in her skin. She always has been, but I really feel like she's doubling down on that in this album. And I am happy to be along for the ride.
Yeah, big time. I read somewhere that she road tested this stuff by actually playing it at parties, like that was a big part of the creation process for her. And the thing that struck me as I was listening this morning was the horn arrangements and like the mm-hmm. and the legacy yep. also of Afrobeat horns mm-hmm. on this record.
Yes.
You have Seyon Kuti, who's Fela Kuti's youngest son, playing brass and leading his band Egypt 80, like a big part of this record. And it's sort of it's subtle sometimes, but uh-huh. it's just in there and you can feel it elevates things, I think.
You got a lot of samba beats there too as mm-hmm. well. Like,
yep.
like
yeah.
Stacey was saying, it's very groovy, jazzy, Afro futurism, Afro beats. And so I do love that. I don't want to be too negative.
Fair enough.
Becca's like, don't be mad at me.
It's good, I swear.
You're allowed to have a critical opinion, though. And I love that Jacob Collier.
It's a safe space.
Yeah, this is the point. But I love the Jacob Collier comparison, too, right? Because he's like such a wild creative that pulls from things that you're like, I didn't even know you could put those things together. But here you are taking me on this journey. And she is a creative like that, Janelle. Any last words on the record before we move on to our next topic of the day? No,
good? Except we have listen fun. To it and have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, have fun. All right, let's switch gears. And now for something completely different, have a listen to this.
How do you know? I don't need
what
to
you,
know.
What do you care about me wasting my time? I could waste my time on whatever. Why are you so concerned? Why are you so concerned about me wasting my time?
Because you waste our time, too.
It feels very cruel to play the voice of Joe Rogan after Janelle Monáe, but we've done it. Okay, that was a clip from the Joe Rogan Experience, the biggest podcast on the planet, and a podcast that has helped to make Spotify a very big player in that world. Okay, so earlier this week, we learned that Spotify laid off 200 employees in its podcasting department. They will also be streamlining that division, they've said. This all tracks with larger concerns that we've been hearing about what the future is of podcasts, which exploded, and now who knows. So Jackson, first question to you, what do you make of all these layoffs?
I mean, I think it's like you said, if you had your ear to the ground, it's kind of inevitable. I remember like when I first came to CBC, the entertainment unit, that was when we were doing all these stories on podcasting, the way of the future, it's going to be this huge, big thing. And I feel like whenever you hear something like that, you look also at streaming, you know that it's probably going to be around. It's going to be an established new thing, but it's not going to be as big as it is going to, as initially it seems like it's going to be. I think this is kind of the end of the golden age of podcasting, where they sunk so much money into it just because they thought everyone would just switch from every media consumption platform over to this. It's definitely really sad. We saw, you know, a round of layoffs at Spotify last year. A lot of news agencies shuttered their podcast units or, you know, ramped them down. CNN did that. And then, yeah, Spotify closed their Spotify studios as well. So it's a sad but not unexpected move is what I would say I'm taking away from it.
Yeah. NPR did a bunch of that too, right? They had a big round of layoffs and podcasts, even really popular podcasts cut at this moment. I know, so Stacey and Harmony, you're both pop culture junkies and you both admit to not being that big on podcasts, which thank you for sharing your truth on that. But in a way, though, you represent the demographic that companies like Spotify have to attract the most to survive. So I'm curious, Harmony, from your personal perspective, what do companies like Spotify do to need to get your attention?
Yeah. So most podcasts I've heard, and this is not an indictment on all podcasts, but the ones that I've heard sound like an inside conversation, like a couple people chatting in a barbershop who then go, we should record this next time. We should start a podcast. Like, to me, they're a giant exercise. And just because you can doesn't mean you should. Just because the mic is on sale,
perfection.
Just because you're able to distribute it doesn't mean that people want to hear you. There's an art to delivering content. And I think the thing that Spotify or any distributor would need to do is kind of focus on that. Don't go after the sure thing that already has the audience, that's already built a fan base, and the ones that can guarantee listeners. Find some new voices, develop some new talent. And the key word there is development. Start developing people, giving them the tools and the resources, and not just physical tools, money, microphones, etc., but, you know, coaches who can help them deliver, people who can help them write with scripting or refine the ideas that they have, produce the show a little bit better. And I think I might be enticed. Like, there are some good podcasts that I've listened to, but I think overall, it's a lot of people who like to hear themselves talk. And my early experience with podcasting turned me off. And I think development is the thing that will bring me over.
Yeah. Hashtag not all podcasts, because there are some very, you know, produced ones.
They're right. Good ones.
But it does seem like there was a swell of companies sinking money into celebrities who just are there to talk. And as people who work professionally in audio and think a lot about craft and how to craft a story and bring people along and invite people in, I found it, to be honest, like so frustrating to see a bunch of celebrities where the premise of the podcast is like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it and you're going to listen.
Exactly.
And I'm getting a lot of money. Stacey?
Very similar. Yeah. So for me, also the problem with podcasts is that there are so many and they're very long and I'm actually paralyzed by the number of choices that I have. So when I do listen to something, it's often because it's a little bit unique. So I like Normal Gossip. I'm just like a nosy person. Or I'm just going to embrace that. Or like, there's one I liked last year called 17, Conversations with My Teenage Self. And there was a concept, like to Harmony's point, this is a produced, like, conceptual thing. It's not just a conversation that goes on for 7 hours with Joe Rogan. Like, what did Joe Rogan even say? He just said, you're wasting, like, yes, you are wasting my time. You absolutely are. The other thing I would say, though, is like, I'm actually just more of a reader than I am a listener or a viewer. And I wonder if part of the problem when we talk about like what Spotify has to do to attract people like me, like maybe I'm just not your audience. Mm. And maybe if the problem, like maybe the problem is that if you're looking for a business or you have a business model that relies on unchecked growth and you need everybody to listen to your thing, like that's not actually maybe possible. Like maybe that's not what we should be doing. We should be actually identifying an audience, creating something that is produced and curated and like, you know, using our craft to tell stories that reaches an audience that wants it instead of building a business model that's like everyone in the world will listen to my thing and will pay to do so. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's just my anti-capitalist heart coming through. I don't know, guys.
Lots to think about there. I love it. And we're going to switch gears, but we're still going to talk about good storytelling, right? Here we go. Have a listen to this. That is the unmistakable theme song for the original Law & Order series. Not only one of the most recognizable theme shows of all time, this is also the longest-running procedural franchise to date, thanks to spinoffs like Law & Order SVU, Law & Order Criminal Intent. Earlier this week, we learned that Law & Order will be adding a Canadian city to its spin-off list. Law & Order Toronto Criminal Intent will hit Canadian TV screens next year. We could hear the collective groan from every other amazing city across this country. Okay, Jackson, what else do we know about this new spinoff?
I mean, as a maybe balm to some people across Canada, they have said that they're going to draw stories from across Canada. They're going to draw a lot from Toronto, but also they're going to have Canadian actors, Canadian writers who aren't necessarily from Toronto. So maybe a tiny bit of diversity there. It's also apparently the most expensive show that Rogers has ever made. So it's maybe going to be visually impressive. And yeah, like I said, it's drawing from real stories. So I really think like my big theory is Canada's number one contribution to the world of true crime basically is the Mr. Big sting, where they get a police officer to impersonate a mafia boss or something. I am betting that's the pilot episode. That's not a fact, but I'm just 100% betting that's what it's going to be.
You heard it here first. The whole stories, you know, ripped from the headlines things make me kind of go, because, of course, the topic of law enforcement, particularly the police, this has been a hot button topic in Toronto and in other cities across Canada. Harmony, how do you see that playing into what we get out of this spinoff series?
So I know it's going to sound strange, but I actually hope it doesn't. I personally do believe that there are issues between the community and the police, and that's not unique to Toronto. Mm-hmm. Even some of the other cities where Law and Order is already set, there are real life issues between the community and the police, and there are discussions about police reform that are very important. That said, when I want to see some like stinging social commentary about police reform, I don't say, let me pull up an episode of Law and Order. Like, I'm not looking to Law and Order to contribute to those conversations.
Shocking.
Exactly. Like, I'm not looking to Law and Order to inform those conversations or add to those conversations. So I really, as an important topic as it is, I do hope that they kind of stay away and leave it as entertainment and leave the serious discussion for a different platform.
Mm, Stacey, what about you?
I think police procedurals in general, like they've done so much to shape people's perceptions of the legal system and policing. Like I see what Harmony's saying. Like, I agree that that's not where you're going for these types of conversations. I don't have a lot of faith that like these showrunners and these producers are going to handle this sensitively. Like, that's not the place. But I also wonder if it's actually responsible to even continue making them. Like, sure, in 2020, there was all this conversation even around something like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and how like they tried to grapple with the idea of abolition in this show that is intended to uphold policing as an institution. And like, to Harmony's point, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. So like, is this where we should be putting our most expensive TV shows ever made in Canada. Like, is this where we should be putting our money? I don't know.
Jury's out. We'll have to see where we come down on the side of Law and Order. And just, I was trying to do some sort of, I don't know, I'm not familiar enough with the show to pull
good.
That off.
The voice was good.
Yeah, we can workshop that. We have time. Nobody's hiring me for Law and Order or Criminal Intent Toronto. It's a good thing. Anyway, let's squeeze in one more topic before we say goodbye for the week. We got to close on this. Apple this week unveiled a new product that they are hoping will change the way we interact with the world. Lofty goals, Apple. Jackson, can you explain what is the Apple Vision Pro headset?
They're weird looking ski goggles, basically. They look so strange. So they're AR, augmented reality glasses. We saw this a similar version of this with Google Glass a couple of years ago. And it's you basically put on these big honking ski goggle looking things. There's a big battery pack that you put in your pocket. And you can see your screen, huge version in front of you. You can, you know, interact with Zoom calls, which I don't know why you'd want that. Or you can, you know, wear them, these big gigantic ski goggles in like pivotal family memory moments. And then later on, you can rewatch your memories in kind of a hologram format. You can maybe sense how I feel about them from the tone of my voice.
That's what we really need. More immersive Zoom calls. Really just a more robust experience.
More Zoom all the time. That's what we want.
More Zoom. Bigger
connections
Zoom.
Connections with people in the real world? No. Zoom.
Get out of here. Give me goggles. Okay. They're massively expensive goggles. I think it works out to almost like $5,000 Canadian. So I will close on the opinions of two of our more discerning panelists. Harmony, will this new headset be getting your hard-earned money?
Not right now, but I said that about the iPhone and the iPad, and now I have both of those things. So I think maybe as they refine the design and the world itself becomes more goggle friendly, I might change my mind. But as of right now, absolutely not.
Okay, Stacey, what about you? Last word.
I also said that about Uggs and then wore them in like the early 2000s. So I think you're right. I will say what I want from Apple, though, is just to be able to like charge my phone and listen to a headset at the same time. And I want them to still give me like a charger with my phone. Like those are the things I want from Apple. I don't want ski goggles that I can have immersive experiences in. So also a no from me.
Is that so much to ask? Is that so much
Apparently,
to ask?
Apparently. Yes.
Oh, man. Well, we got to leave it there. But this has been a blast. Thank you all so much for hanging out today.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Absolutely. A Harmony is a freelance music critic and the host of Marvin's Room on CBC Music. Jackson Weaver is a senior writer with CBC Entertainment. And Stacey Lee Kong is a writer and culture critic.
Don't need to rush. We got time in our cups. Yeah, it's just a little dance under the sun. Yeah, it's a lifestyle. I told you I don't need a night out. My bank account be looking nice now.
That's Neon Dreams with Little Dance. I want to tell you about a show happening tonight in Halifax. It's called the Wildfire Recovery Concert. A bunch of artists, like the ones you're hearing right now, will be playing. You'll have Classified, Jen Grant, Jamila, and many more coming together to raise money to support people who have been affected by the fires in Nova Scotia. It all happens at the Scotiabank Centre in Halifax. And for everyone in that province and across the country right now who are dealing with this, here at Commotion, we wanted to say that we are thinking of you, wishing you the best. Please stay safe. And that's the Commotion for today. My name's Talia Schlanger. I'm sitting in for Elamine Abdul Mahmoud, wishing you a wonderful weekend. See you next time.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.